This WBEZ podcast is supported by the Crown Family School of Social Work, Policy, and Practice at the University of Chicago, where research meets real-world impact. The master's program in social work, social policy, and social administration blends classroom learning with extensive field education, guided by faculty known for groundbreaking research. Applications are open at crownschool.uchicago.edu/socialwork. Inspire change. Shape the future.
What's up, Chicago? I'm Erin Allen, and this is The Rundown. So today, we're talking card games. You know spades or bridge? If you're an older adult, you might have came up playing a game called Whist. Well, the game we're going to talk about today has elements of all those games. It's a trick-taking game, but it's also more complex, more fun, and just way better than any other card game I've ever played.
Bidwist is the ultimate card game. Bidwist is the world's coolest card game. And I believe that if you've not yet experienced Bidwist, the world's greatest card game awaits you.
Period. Of all the cards, thank you. Ooh, this is Lamont Jones. He recently wrote a whole book on Bidwist. And he joined me on the Rundown podcast earlier this year to talk about it. I meant it when I said it. The game is complex. So we're not going to get into the specifics of how to play. You can check out his book for that. But what's so interesting besides playing Bid is the game's cultural context. That's what I wanted to talk to Lamont about. And the first thing he had to know before we got started was, do I play Bid? I do play Bid.
Yeah.
I grew up hearing, are we going to Boston? Choo, choo, choo. Woo, woo. I'm going to take you to Boston. My uncle, my great uncle used to put his winning card
on his forehead.
Put it on his forehead to taunt everybody else in the game because, you know, it's very psychological.
Oh, yes.
There is something about sitting down, playing a game together in the same game every time for years that creates a really singular connection between people. You go through a lot. Hope, defeat, camaraderie, strategy. It can really make any relationship that much deeper. And when you're gathered around with loved ones during the holidays, why not make things interesting by adding a card game to the mix? What's so special about Bid?
Oh, thank you for the question. I think what Bidwist has that differentiates it from spades especially, but also from bridge and other card games, it's got that knockout factor. It doesn't matter what the score is. It doesn't matter which team is winning. On any hand, at any time, either team can win the game. It makes every decision important. It keeps the game taut. It keeps it intense. It keeps it lively. The only other sport that has it is boxing.
All right. And there's your pitch.
There you go.
So today, Lamont is going to get into the history of this taut, intense, lively card game, which started right here in Chicago, and why he has made it his mission to keep the game alive. Lamont Jones is a boxing lawyer, self-proclaimed Bidwist ambassador, and the author of The Gist of Bidwist, the culturally rich card game from Black America. Lamont, welcome to The Rundown.
Thanks for having me, Erin. Thrilled to be here.
I'm so excited to talk to you. So, first question, tell me about the first time you played Bidwist.
Well, I grew up as a spades player. So when I was about 12 years old, I got to play spades with my mom and some of her friends and that sort of thing. So I thought it was a big deal at that point. I played throughout my teenage years, throughout college. On the very first day of law school orientation, I met a couple of fellas and they said, you guys want to play cards? So I said, yeah, we can bust some spades right now. That's what I do, right?
Right, period.
And they were like, well, yeah, we have something different, they said, something we believe is better than spades. That's when I was introduced to Bidwist. I haven't looked back.
I don't blame you. Bidwist, once you get to it, it is an irresistible, complex, amazing game. Okay, so you ended up playing endless rounds of Bidwist. You really honed your skills, like you said, in law school with your homies, Sean, Randy, and Terry.
Oh, you read the book. I sure appreciate that. Yes.
Tell me about how the book project came about, though.
Let's do it. I'll say this about Sean, Randy, and Terry. They claim that they taught me Bidwist. I don't give them quite that much credit. I will allow that they introduced me to the game, right? But I'm not going to admit that those jokers taught me to play. But let's see. The book project, it became important for me to research it and write it when it became clear to me that Bidwist is more than just a game, it's really a cultural force. Mm. And there were three things really that happened that really solidified that belief in me. First was, I remember moving from New York to Texas to California. Mm-hmm. And when I was in Los Angeles, I met the father of one of my law school colleagues, and I asked him whether he'd ever played Bidwist. The man jammed his finger in my chest. He said, "I went to NAMM because of Bidwist," right? And he explained that he'd been exempt from the draft because he was a college student, but he played so much Bidwist in the student union that his grades dipped and he wound up being eligible for the draft and going to Vietnam. So that kind of reinforced that, hey man, this, you know, people talk smack about this game from coast to coast. Not long after that, someone mentioned the Pullman Porters connection. Mm-hmm. and how the Pullman Porters had been vital in popularizing the game across the nation. So that was a research interest. And so I that helped make me alert for stories and anecdotes about the game. And then several years later, when my daughter was about 8 years old, she's in her early 20s now, living her best life. her mom and I had gone through divorce, and we had her seeing a therapist. And Aaliyah, my daughter, told the therapist that, you know, she was sad and unhappy and angry about this new life. You know, she, you know, spent the summers in a different city with her dad and the holidays and some weekends. And, you know, we played a lot of cards when we did that. And the therapist asked, "Have you told anybody about your feelings about this?" And Aaliyah says, "Well, I told my daddy." "Why'd you tell him?" "Well, when I'm with him," she said in her 8-year-old way, "we play a lot of cards. And when you're sitting there playing cards, you got to talk about something," mm-hmm. right? So hearing this anecdote really reinforced for me that this game I love is about more than the competition. It's about more than the smack talk. It really is a way of fostering conversation and fostering connection, even across generations, even across other sort of social divides.
Yeah. Tell me about saying, like, all right, I think I'm going to be the one to write this book about Bidwist.
There was a moment when I wanted my daughter to, you know, play with me against other people. So I wanted to go to Barnes & Noble down the street and pick up a book and give that to her, the teacher. And it really wasn't there. So that's when I really started, you know, really started the process of writing. And I remember the first chapter that I wrote. I was telling the story of the first time my wife and I went out on a date, right? And the date seemed to be going pretty well. And I asked her, "Do you play Bidwist?" And she said, "No, that, you know, that's an old person's game, right?" So I'm like, this is not going anywhere. But in the next breath, she says, "My daddy will sit there and play Bidwist all day and all night," right?
So that redeemed her a little bit, right?
I was ready to meet this brother who played all day and all night.
Yes.
I remember I was going to meet him for the first time. So Stacy had called him. We were going to go meet them down in the Outer Banks. And I said, "Hey, how's the weather down in the Outer Banks?" And he's like, "What? The weather here's fine. Why are you asking?" I said, "You know, Hurricane Lamont's about to blow through there, right?" And he said, "You need to be checking the weather in Boston because I'm sending your ass to Boston."
Hey. Right? So. Yes. Okay. So we're going to get to that Boston reference in a minute. First, I want to just talk about where this game came from. So give me a sense of, like, the way in the beginning, what was the conception of Bidwist?
Bidwist, as well as spades, as well as hearts, as well as euchre, as well as bridge, all the games that we enjoy now, they're all branches on the tree of the original game, whist. Mm. Not Bidwist, just whist, right?
Whist.
And whist was the most popular game in the world in the 1800s and the 1700s and the 1600s.
I hear Jane Austen was writing about whist. And
there you go.
Yeah, different folks.
Go.
Yeah, uh-huh.
Bidwist, I think, became popular in Black communities because of the singular influence of the Pullman Porters.
And for folks who aren't aware, can you just tell us who were the Pullman Porters?
You know, there was a time in the early 20th century when overnight rail travel was sort of at the epicenter of American life, and the porters were central to that experience. In some ways, they were like, you know, the flight attendants of today, but they really did a whole lot more in providing sort of the first class service for the passengers. So that was their day job, right? But they played Bidwist on their get-togethers, and they helped popularize the game in communities across the country. Part of that was because of the respect that the porters commanded, right? They were revered figures in the Black community. They had one of the few jobs that provided a path to the middle class. They shared information that helped fuel the Great Migration. They were cultural connectors, right? Telling people about the latest jazz and blues records and that sort of thing. So because of the respect that they commanded, their game, the Porter's game, Bidwist, became popular in communities across the country.
Yeah. So what is the Chicago connection to Bedwist?
I think that Chicago has a strong claim to being the spiritual home of Bedwist, in part because the Pullman Porters were headquartered here. And we know the vital role that the Porters played in popularizing the game throughout the country. But Chicago also has, you know, a vibrant contemporary Bedwist scene, right? We've got some of our luminaries play Bedwist. I'm thinking about Jim Reynolds and Sandy Reynolds and Liz Thompson and Don Thompson. And I'm thinking about the actor and comedian Craig Robinson. So Chicago is a strong Bedwist hotbed that, in my view, is the spiritual home of Bedwist.
Let's talk about the title of the game, Bedwist. Yes. Now, we talked about Whist a little bit. Whist is an old, old game. People have been playing it. It is kind of the umbrella for a family of different kinds of games, bridge included. Right. But then there's the bid component, right? So this is what starts to color Bedwist and differentiate it, that, the kitty, I mean, all these different things. But, you know, tell me about the bidding. What is it about bidding and Bedwist that really kind of differentiates it?
Like you, a lot of people call the game just bid.
I
mean, for 10 years, I played this game, and that's what we called it, bid. I didn't know it was called Bedwist, right?
And then it's like Bedwist,
Bizwiz, all this. Yeah, all these different names, right? But what I'll say in response to your question is this. In the old game of Whist, the dealer would deal out all the cards to the four players and then turn over the last card. And whatever the suit of that last card was would be deemed the trump suit for the upcoming round, right? So, you know, imagine, Aaron, you're sitting there, you got a handful of hearts and they're looking good and you're ready to play. But then the dealer flips over the last card. It's a spade, right? Your hearts are worth a lot less. You know, your hand's going to be a lot less powerful. So I think at some point in the evolution of the game, the originators of Bedwist decided, hey, we don't like this random trump card element. We're going to give the players the opportunity to first look at their hands and then say, hey, if you allow me to declare what the trump suit is based on what's in my hand, then my partner and I will be able to score a certain number of points. And that's sort of how the game evolved. And that's what differentiates it from what I like to call original Whist.
Mm-hmm.
And then along the same lines, you know, there's an auction process like that in Bridge. But in Bridge, the auction, it goes around and around and, you know, it uses sort of complicated conventions and terminology and that sort of thing. And that's why Bridge has sort of a steep learning curve to learn it. In Bedwist, each player gets one opportunity to bid. So the auction is short, right? It's important, but it's short. Mm-hmm. And then you can get into the gameplay. And the gameplay is where the fun and the action really lie.
Oh, my God. It's so fun. It's like high stakes. You know,
have you ever been at the table and seen somebody, you know, either run a Boston or think they're going to run a Boston and hear the sort of chatter that comes with that?
Oh yes. On our way to Boston, we on our way. They're taunting you. You know,
I love it.
Let's talk about that. So what is running a Boston and where does that reference come from?
Again, I go back to the Pullman Porters, right? Because we know that on the trains, they had certain rigidly defined rules, right? Dictated by segregation and that sort of thing. But when they got together on their own, right? Maybe a group of 200 of them were getting ready to be deployed to different cities, right? The next day. But they played their game. And in these contexts, they could revel in their full humanity, right? Mm-hmm. They could talk their smack. Mm-hmm. They could display their mathematical acumen and their verbal wit, right? And I think that that's where a lot of the sort of the smack talk part of the game originated.
Yes.
With respect to Boston, you know, a lot of people say, and I don't dispute it, right, that running a Boston means you're winning all the tricks, all the books in a particular hand, right? So it's like we're beating you all across the country, all the way to Boston, right?
We took you all the way to Boston. You didn't get no stops in. We took you straight there. Yeah. So that means your opponents did not win any of the hands that were played.
None of them.
You have a story in the book about meeting Reverend Jesse Jackson in Chicago. And he told you that he's only lost one game of Bedwist.
I mean, you mentioned it earlier, like Bedwist folks like to talk a little smack.
Uh-huh.
But this was not a smack talking sort of situation. I mean, he was about to go on stage and give a speech. And I saw a couple other people go up to him and it seemed like he sort of said, hey, not now, not now, right? Uh-huh. But I worked up my nerve and I said, Reverend Jackson, word on the street is that, you know, you're a pretty good bid whist player. And he sort of like looks out into the distance. He says, I lost the game of bid whist once. He said, I was six.
Wow.
And I lost because I was six, right? So, but one of my favorite pieces of bid whist smack talk, no question.
Yes, yes. In my case, for instance, speaking of being six, I wasn't six when I learned, but when I play with my family, I'm always the youngest person at the table. I'm 37. I'm always the youngest, sometimes the youngest by far. I wonder if you can talk about how did that happen? What happened to bid? Why do you think people in, you know, these newer generations don't play bid as much anymore?
Well, first, Aaron, let me say thank you for holding it down.
Hey.
Because I really thought that I was one of the younger members of the Bidwist cohort, and I got you by a couple decades. But man, I wish I had the answer to that question, right? Mm. What I will say, though, is that, you know, my effort, my initiative is to help preserve the game by sharing the game with as many people as possible, right? And by inviting people to the table to learn the game in a structured way, in an unintimidating way.
My family is one of the few families that I've come across that will actually teach you how to play bid or spades or how to hustle. You know, these typical, very typical kind of cultural Black American things.
Yes,
a lot of folks I meet who didn't learn how to do these cultural activities growing up, they're just out of luck. You know, sometimes they're ridiculed at the cookout.
You alluded to this earlier, right? There are so few bid whist players, right? That when we get together, we want to play.
Yes.
We want to compete.
Yes.
And that's not the time to, like, you know, do the step-by-step how to play.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So that's part of the challenge. And you know, that's part of what we're trying to address with the Gist of Bid Whist, for sure.
Yes. Well, the Gist of Bid Whist definitely does that. And if you already play bid, I can attest the book is still helpful because most of us did not learn in the technical environment, right? We learned in the competitive environment.
Yes.
And so, yeah, definitely check it out. Lamont Jones is a boxing lawyer and the author of The Gist of Bid Whist, The Culturally Rich Game from Black America. Lamont, it has been a pleasure. Thank you.
Aaron, thank you so much for having me. I look forward to playing bid whist with you.
Ooh, yeah. Let me know next time you're in Chicago. We can get a game going. I got to think about who my partner's going to be.
We can be partners.
Okay, we'll be partners. We'll find our opponents.
You bet.
The Gist of Bid Whist is out now and available wherever you get your books.
And that's it for today. Justin Bull and I produced this episode of The Rundown. Ariel Van Cleve is our editor and executive producer. Our theme music is by Louis Weeks. The Rundown is produced by WBEZ Chicago and is a part of the NPR network. I'm Erin Allen. Thank you for listening.